up next on KSEO. It's hour number two of the Dr. Future Show.
Okay, welcome to our Burning Man show. We're here in the studio with a group of burners, you might say. You know, also old friends of mine, one who has been for the first time. I've known him for 30 years, the first time he was on the playa, Michael Perazzo.
Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I was a virgin burner.
Yeah.
Wow, that was... I mean, you've been talking about it for so many years. So many people had gone. This was my year to lose my playa virginity.
Oh, good. Well, I look forward to sharing some of your stories with us on this. And I also want to introduce your beautiful wife, Veronica, who's here. Hi, Veronica. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing your story. You've been to the playa twice now, right?
I have. 13 years ago.
That's right. Yeah, I believe you were in our camp even back in those days.
Indeed. Yeah. Emerald City.
Yeah. Yeah, the beginning of some playa adventures.
We are not in Kansas anymore.
No.
No, we're
that
not.
That was not just the usual Emerald City. And we also have Michael Olson in the studio, our station manager.
Hey, am I here?
Yeah, you're here.
You have to turn me up, I think.
You're live. I didn't, I swear.
There I am.
I've got everybody.
Okay, so the futures talk about the past.
Yes, yes, a little bit sometimes, but it's all in the present.
Well, it's the evolving future.
Yes.
All happening.
That's right.
We brought Michael Olson in because he had a story to share with us about the origins of the cargo cult.
Which is the theme this year.
Yeah, cargo cults was the theme of Burning Man this year. And it started in the South Pacific, right, Michael?
Yes, South Pacific and World War II, actually. So how did they present the whole notion of cargo cults at Burning Man? What was the...
Well, everyone had their own interpretation of it.
Okay, that's the best part of it, right? Yeah, everybody can do what everybody wants.
Yeah, they did have a basic story that they told about cargo cults.
The authentic story that you're about to tell was the inspiration for the theme.
Yeah, so following in the tradition of this, we're going to start with the classic story, which you know, so that we can then divert from it.
Okay, so this story takes us back to the year 1941, December 7th, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Mm-hmm. We all of a sudden became enmeshed in World War II in the Pacific. And in the Pacific, the Japanese rapidly took over a huge, huge chunk of the Pacific territory. Oh my goodness, almost a third of the entire Pacific Rim was under Japanese control. And they were moving rapidly to take over the supply routes between the United States and Australia. And to do so, they were going to build an airstrip on a little place called Guadalcanal. Mm. So that's where the focal point of the huge naval battle and land battle took place for this little island in the South Pacific. Hmm. Now, to stage for this campaign, the United States looked around the Pacific and thought, well, this little island called Espiritu Santo in the New Hebrides group is a perfect place. It has a sheltered anchorage. It's easy to defend and protect. And so this island nation and the New Hebrides was populated by Melanesian people. Mm. When you hear melanin, of course, melanin always refers to skin, color. Mm-hmm. This color of our skin is what melanin gives us. So these people were out of Africa, very, very dark skinned, very big people. So the Navy sent an observer to see what the interaction would be between these Midwest farm boys that found themselves on ships and these Melanesian people of the South Pacific. The observer's name is James Michener, who, of course, later went on to write Tales from the South Pacific. And I kind of became fascinated with this because I was writing a story about my father's Navy ship, which happened to be one of the first ships to arrive at Espiritu Santo.
Oh.
And so my father has this wonderful story about walking along the beach. My father's from Montana, right? There's okay. no water within 50 miles of his yeah. place. And right. he's walking along the beach, and he sees coconuts. And he reaches down and picks up these coconuts and starts to pick them up. But he notices this pair of great big black feet, bigger than anything he've ever seen in his life. And he kept looking up, and there's a big, huge man with his arms folded looking out to sea. And so my dad put the coconuts back down and left. But at any rate, these Melanesian people were very primitive. And on some of the islands, even today, they're very, very, very primitive. So when the United States started to build up for this campaign for Guadalcanal, they started flying in cargo to Espiritu Santo. They paved runways in the jungle. They built Quonset huts. And pretty soon, there was stuff everywhere.
Stuff from America.
Stuff from America. And these islanders were just going, oh, my goodness. And when they would meet a sailor, the sailor would say, hi, I'm John from South Dakota, or I'm Bob from Kansas, or something like that. Mm. These islanders had no idea what the heck that meant, but they're John from.
John from.
And so during the initial period of those war years, there was a lot of stuff, a lot of cargo. Everybody had stuff, you know. There was stuff coming out of the skies. It was the most magical thing the islanders had ever seen ever in their recorded history or their oral history.
Wow.
And then the war ended, and what happened? The Americans took all their stuff and took it home or threw it in the ocean and left nothing.
Really? They just got rid of it?
It all just disappeared. Wow. And these islanders, all of a sudden, there was no stuff. And so they started forming a religion, a cult, called the cargo cult. And what they would do is that they would build runways in the jungle. And they would build control towers out of sticks. And they would build replica radios. And they would worship John From. Wow. John From anywhere. Now, I was back in the island nations is now called Vanuatu, and I was back recently, and I saw where Prince Charles was visiting the island, and a number of the islanders had adopted him as John From. So that's the story of the cargo cults.
Oh, good. Thank you, Michael. That's a good background for beginning this conversation. Excellent. You know, let's go on to our permutations of John From and our experiences out there on the playa.
Wow. I mean, it correlation that I saw, Alan, I was at the Tetrion camp, which is Hank Rogers, the founder and inventor, or one of the inventors of Tetris.
Really?
The interpretation that they had of cargo cult was that this has happened to us as human beings, and that the pyramids or the what we take has been the John Frums, that they've come from space. And so here at Burning Man, the interpretation was that our efforts to recreate the cargo cult has resulted in a John From coming back. But they took it one step farther, which was it was not just that John From, but it was the John From above John From. So they kind of took it to the Tetris level. They cleared the levels.
So that's funny because, you know, Sun Hero, Mrs. Future, is a very big Tetris fan.
Oh, I would say a Tetris addict in my day, although I haven't actually played Tetris in over a year.
But it has positive influence on her behavior. I mean, she insists on packing all her own grocery bags.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I do Tetris in the real world.
So does Veronica.
Insists on packing the car, all these things. And I owe it all to this Tetris addiction. It's remarkable.
Yes. Very relaxing to fit things tightly and perfectly into a place.
Yeah. And we also have Agent K here.
Here's a question from Agent K. Did you see anything at Burning Man that was beyond Tetris?
Oh, my gosh. Beyond Tetris. I think almost everything that I saw was just phenomenally just over the top. The first thing is you have the most extreme place on the planet. I mean, you're out
the
middle of
Desert.
Black Rock Desert. You're in Nevada, which is surreal anyway.
Yeah, it's the most remote place you can get in America.
As you're passing Mustang Ranch and the last vestiges of Lake Pyramid, you know, the ancient sites of Native Americans in that area, and this ancient seabed where they found fish which were thought to be extinct millions and millions of years ago. So you're in this primal force area.
I heard they found bones of whales out there, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so you just go like, wow. So you're in this area, and then you see some of the most creative force that I have ever seen in art. Because, I mean, this is probably the greatest art installation that the planet ever produces. I hear people think, well, it was different back in the day. But my whole issue is that I just found it for the now, what's happening now and how people have come together and the type of art and the varied type of art and the people participating in the art was just incredible. It was performance art to a level I've never seen before.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is there's lots of different kinds of art. There's dance art. There's actual physical buildings that are created out there. What was your favorite, Veronica? What?
Oh, there's so many things that come to mind, but I just flashed on this moment when we came upon these women on stilts with these huge satin wings, and they looked like Thai girls. There's two of them with these huge wings that went out like maybe 20 feet.
Wow.
Yeah, and they were like these huge butterflies coming across the playa with their bright red wings. And then we came across some of the most physically adept people that I've ever seen. This one fellow was on a slack line. Yeah. They do this new type of yoga. He was a tightrope walker. And they had a really high wire that they were going across, but they had one that was low to the ground. And as he came across it, he started to lose his balance. And then he started to swing with it until his legs literally were going completely lateral out to the sides, back and forth so quickly.
Oh.
And he kept his balance the entire time. We stayed and watched him for probably about 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
And when he was done, he came and said, "Will you sign my T-shirt?" Because you stayed and watched me. Wow.
Wonderful. So, well, we're going to take a break for a minute. We'll come back to some more Burning Man stories from this year. Burning Man 2013 Cargo Cults.
All right. Dr. Future Show. We'll be right back.
Okay, we're talking about Burning Man 2013 Cargo Cults, this year's theme. It's kind of funny, the conversation continued through the break about this slackline being the new yoga, and I wanted to get a little bit more from Mark. I guess, what do you mean by that?
Well, it's this whole culture, you know, that's sprung up out of nowhere, and it's really such a supreme art form because you have to be so in your center to be able to do it.
Describe it again for our audience, exactly what you do. Are you balancing on a line, or are you...
Yes, yeah. It's kind of like tightrope walking, but it's slightly broader. It's maybe an inch and a half, the one that I was on. They had it set up so you could just go and give it a try.
Can't you just fall off it really easily?
Yeah, but it's low to the ground. It's not. I mean, they had a high tightrope, but this was one that was low to the ground that anyone could come and do. And the longer it gets, the wilder it goes because, you know, the torque that you can get from going side to side on it when it's really long. Substantial. So the shorter it is, the easier it is.
Sorry, I say you start short and you work your way along.
And it's, Ellen, it's a trampoline effect on this line. It is a balance beam effect on this line. And people can flip. I mean, they actually do flips.
They flip on the line.
And unlike a trampoline or a balance beam, you have this lateral movement back and forth.
Where it's going.
And so as it tensions, you've got this kind of this spring going to a side-to-side effect. So it's an amazing coordination. It's physical, amazingly physical. Veronica actually was up there, well, you know, walking across it and accomplished it. She did amazingly well. I was an observer.
You actually did it then, right?
I did. I wouldn't miss out.
So how long
That's the whole thing about Burning Man. You can jump in and try everything.
AJK, do you have a question on this?
I don't have a comment? Question. I'm saying you can buy these things for about... And I'm not going to say any particular brand, but they're available at a mountaineering store, anyone nearby, and... I was first introduced about 3 years ago in San Francisco. They hang them between the palm trees. And you go up, and like Veronica was saying, it's about an inch and a half to 2 inches wide. But when you first step on, it's almost like rock climbing. Now, as a rock climber, I know when you first learn to rock climb, it's scary.
Yeah.
Now, this is not scary because you're 2 inches off the ground or 5 inches or, you know, not very high, right?
Yeah.
But yet, the body shakes. And so what you do is you have to go into your center.
Uh-huh.
Your muscles actually shake until you do that yoga.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then when you hit your center, then you don't shake anymore. Then you can walk. So it's the mind-body
coordination
training.
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And this is why people go to Burning Man, is to discover these cultural
novelties. And it's just one small thing.
Yeah,
exactly. Because, again, the art was just incredible. I mean, you have these, there was structures made by Rob Bell, a local San Francisco artisan, who made these temples. I can only describe them as these, he calls them zomes, Z-O-M-E-S. And I think he called them zomatopias. There's no nails. They're puzzle pieces that are constructed together that are these geometric shapes, amazingly taking on a curved structure, but they're all flat, that these puzzle pieces together. I can't even describe it. I mean, that's one of the things, Alan, and I have to go back to. Here we are on a radio trying to describe this visual experience where there isn't an ability other than to say, oh, my gosh, they were so detailed, so phenomenal.
These are climbable structures, right?
Yes.
You can climb in them.
Climbable.
And you can hang out in them in various places.
Pods.
There are several different types. Yeah. The ones that were in the center of the playa, they looked like these giant Hershey Kisses in their shape. They were all these beautiful diamonds that had cut out circles and were all assembled into this shape that looked so elegant. And the ones that you could climb into, they looked like these geodesic balls that you could go inside of and hang from and climb from one to the next.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do in these? What kind of activities are they suitable for?
For just being inside of it and looking out over the playa. It was like it was framing the moment because there were these portals, these windows you could look out of that were all different shapes and sizes.
Incredible views, and plus you can have nice conversations with people.
Yes.
I think, Alan, the other side is that, like Veronica was saying, you're looking through these little windows and you realize that no matter where you look, there is something happening. It's almost like that story about the little monk who would look underneath his chair. And people go like, you know, why don't you get up and enjoy life? He says, there's so much going on in this little 1 square foot area. I don't have to do anything.
That reminded me of something.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We saw this bald-headed man in a robe who jumped up and levitated with one hand on, he had one hand on a cane, and he had put this carpet out in the middle of the playa, and he was standing right in front of the man. He would sit there and start to ohm, and he'd find his center point and compress his hand down over his center and then jump up into the air with his legs crossed and levitate while he's ohming. That was quite a sight.
Yeah, and you actually saw him levitate, huh?
Yes, we watched him do it 3 times.
Yeah. This is sort of like an alien Chris Angel out in the middle of the playa.
Practicing his craft.
And then, of course, the Burning Man himself, the structure is so huge this year. I think you used the term forbidden planet. The flying saucer.
Right.
The scale, it was 5 to 6 stories. And then you have, of course, the symbol of Burning Man on top of that, rotating.
Right.
And again, you have the immensity of the scale. So you climb up the structure, and the way you exit is through slides.
Yes.
You slide
I love
down.
The slides.
I mean,
that was just
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, the creative notion of coming out there and constructing this and then having people enjoy it and then thinking, oh, my gosh. And then, again, the cargo culture, because it's made out of wood and this plywood structures and pine, out in the middle of the playa. And then, you know, John Frum coming down, we're trying to say, bring us the stuff.
Yeah.
Bring us the stuff back. Come on back,
Agent
brothers.
Agent K, you have a question on this?
Yes, this is fantastic. Speaking from a scientific perspective, I would like to know if you could explain, did the levitating man jump up? How did he actually achieve his levity?
She wants to know the trick here.
I'm really glad you asked that question because I paid a lot of attention to this.
Yes, Veronica, I know, is a gymnast and a dancer and is very physically aware of...
Tell the illusion or just let it stand?
But I'll tell you that he did not jump
as he was preparing, you saw him go up higher and higher on his toes, and he would literally lead more to his left side till the right foot was almost completely extended, and he was almost completely on top of his big toe. Yes.
And then?
And then there would be a slight bounce up into the air, and then he would hover and hold himself like that. And it would look so surreal because you're standing there looking at this man levitating who's completely bald. He looked quite alien, actually. With his long robes, with this giant UFO structure with the Burning Man right above that.
Yeah.
He sounds like an accomplished master. Did you speak with him afterwards?
No.
Physically, I mean, just to be able to do that illusion, because I'm going to say, I mean, even if it was not levitation, from that regard, because of the cane was assisting. But the physical prowess of someone to be able to do that and to even be assisted after you get to that point was fantastic.
Oh,
and again,
yeah.
It's art, it's performance, because you're suspending yourself into this surreal world of magic and mystery and adventure, and every single thing I said to Veronica was an experience. It's going to take a long time to process it.
I just want to talk about one thing that we saw in the center of the playa. It was so creative. Somebody had come up with this idea where they had these monkeys that were all hanging in a ring.
Yes.
And there was a snake that was coming down to get this apple. And the snake actually gets the apple, and the monkey eats it right out of the mouth of the snake.
Yes.
But this whole structure would only rotate if every single person in a circle was all drumming in rhythm on these MIDI drums.
Oh, great.
Yes.
And there was probably, I don't know, 12, 13 of them.
Yeah, that's the persistence of vision effect with the monkey.
And then they have the strobe.
The 18 monkeys, each is like a still frame stop animation.
Yes.
Rotates in a circle with a strobe, and it animates this whole thing so that you see the monkey and the snakes.
We were out there at 2 o'clock really in the morning, and people are lined up to do the drumming.
Oh.
And now across the way from that is another one, which is
another
U.S.
zoetrope?
Yeah, exactly. With another
zoetropes.
Mm-hmm. With the American hat back from Uncle Sam. And, of course, you have someone leaping up trying to get the apple that's being dropped out of the hat, which is symbolizing Americans trying to reach for the apple being dropped out in the American dream of being snatched, seemingly being snatched away. So the statements, this particular one had a tremendous, one was almost a religious theme. The other one is a political theme. So you have the art making a lot of statements and everyone touring around. Now, we were in the Tetris art car, which is a giant koi fish. The structures of these cars, they're called art cars, Al, as you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, the art car is a whole subculture of Burning Man.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So we saw a 90 to 100 foot yacht that someone had retrofitted on a cherry picker so it could gain altitude and go through.
Did you go on any of the yacht
cruises?
We did. There was one that was a converted jet. And the engines were the sound system, which was quite appropriate.
It was a moving discotheque. There were a lot of musical themes as you came through the playa. I'd heard stories from Veronica, who's been a big advocate of Goa, had experienced Mallorca and Ibiza.
The Goa trance.
Yes, that kind of thing.
Great
and so that's
to a dance.
Amazing
dance
culture that is part of Burning Man, which is probably growing now. So you've got this tremendous, fun playa art experience of just party. It goes on and on and on until dawn, and then there's a small break at about 10 o'clock till about maybe 11:30, and then it starts up again. And you hear the pulsing, this trance beat that goes on through the heartbeat of the entire area.
That's right. You guys were up near some of the larger dance.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We were right in the
Tell everybody your address. What was your address?
We were at 9:45 and the Esplanade.
Right.
Yes, the Esplanade is the front, the sort of the beachfront where all the main nightclubs are, if you will.
I'd like to ask Veronica, what was one of your top three moments that you had there? One of three.
Oh, thank you for asking that, because that just brings back to mind one of the most exquisite moments. And that was when the sun had started to rise. And we were out in the center of the playa. We'd gone to the center camp, to the UFO. And we had been walking out. And I saw these photographers taking time-lapse camera shots of all the people going in and out. And I looked up, and the moon was right over the man. And straight down to midnight on the playa was the sun rising. And you could see the sun rising over all the art on the playa. With the moon at the apex overhead. And that was really just
God just splashed the beauty of creation right there in the middle of the playa. It was fabulous.
Awesome. Wow. Great moments.
I'm going to take it to the other direction. There's a structure there called the Temple. I think this year it was built by Fleischmann. I think the previous years there was another gentleman who was best, and maybe the two of them collaborated. David. But this structure, it is there for people to give away. If they have something that they want to let go of for the year, a lot of times it's people that have passed on or people who are struggling with a certain type of ailments or diseasements, relationships that they're trying to rebuild or to recapture, or those who have passed on. So to me, just seeing this amazing double pyramid structure with, again, absolutely no nails, no metal of any kind. So it's a puzzle piece, amazing, probably ascending 70 feet into the air. Mm. And maybe covering thousands of square feet down below it. Mm. And so you see all these people writing graffiti and poems and then posting all this other artwork inside of it, which was burned on Sunday evening.
Yeah, they were posting artwork and writings about loved ones that had passed
on, right.
Just in the last year or so.
So to me, that was a tremendous, again, issue of performance art involvement, both present and past and future. And an expression, again, here in the middle of how much farther away from everything can you get than the Black Rock Desert.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Agent K?
Yeah, I think what's also noticeable about the temple is that Burning Man is a very loud event, depending on what time of day, but it's very loud pretty much all the time until after the burn, and that's when what you're talking about, the temple, everybody has this reverence, and there's a quietness, and people are invited to write their prayers and anything that they need to do, so that there's this quietness all day Sunday.
Yes, and the temple burn itself is very different from the man burn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I will say one other thing, Alan, yes. On a completely different note. We entered Burning Man on, was it Tuesday? Wednesday.
Wow.
And we were there, we get to the line, and we can see the line of cars, and we arrive. At I think about 6 o'clock. Now to get in, there's 10 lanes to get in of RVs and cars and all this. So the line in is an event in itself.
Yeah.
And it took us 5 hours to process through this, which includes a staging area where they came into our RV and asked, are you harboring? Is there anything here we should know about? You know, making sure we're not taking anything that could potentially harm other people or anything like that.
Yeah, no fireworks.
Right, exactly. So you pass this moment and you get into the playa. But I felt, wow, 5 hours. You think they could, with all this effort and the number of years, they could make that a little bit more efficient, whatever. And then I heard from other people that they spent 9 to 12 hours in this process. So I have to thank my stars that we actually had a pretty short time.
Only 5 hours.
In the hour. But even that, I have to say, just going in there and we had our Burning Man hats on and we were changing clothes as we go through, then you're getting into the spirit and you can see this energy building. It was quite a portal into this event. So it was a transition time to know that as you cross this line, everything was going to be different.
Yes. The outside world is affectionately known as default reality. It really is quite a sign of a Bay Area culture, a lot of it. It shows you what we could create if we wanted to design civilization from scratch. We're going to take another break. We'll be right back with a final segment on our experiences of Burning Man 2013, Cargo Cult. Okay, welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We were talking about Burning Man 2013, Cargo Cults. Agent K, you have another question that of our guests?
Yes, I'd like to ask Veronica, what would you like to do next year on the playa? And what would you like to do with your husband? How do you partner together and what is your work that you could see coming into some creative, amazing form on the playa? Or do you?
Wow, you know, it's such an undertaking to do a project for Burning Man, because you have all the elements against you and, you know, it takes so much time to prepare. But in the best case scenario, I've dreamed of creating this space with our technology, which Michael's invented, whereby we could use our movement and our voice to illuminate things.
Oh, yes, we might add that Michael is quite an inventor.
Yes.
I think I met you after your software company, after you graduated from the U.S. Air Force Academy.
That's right.
And now you've had your own company for years and come up with some rather unique things. If anyone wanted to see any of them, what website would you send them to?
MODDHA, MODDHA, MODDHA.org. Mm-hmm. It really, what the idea is that our technologies and the patents are designed to help people. So we put it into the use for our nonprofit. We have a for-profit, but MODDHA also has a MODDHA International Foundation is designed to help the planet and to heal it. And I think that what I saw at Burning Man and what we're talking about here is mm-hmm. that we have the power. There's one thing I could say. You get 70,000 people mm-hmm. out in the middle of the desert being creative, having fun, showing people that we can have fun. And I think the other thing that I have to say, Alan, mm-hmm. that the medium age is not 19 years old. These were not young kids going out to just go smoke and party and hallucinate. These were responsible adults. I think the median age I saw was from the site looked about 36. I think it was actually higher. I think it was around 40 to 42.
Yeah, I have a buddy there who's the chief scientist of Pixar. He's there every year.
And I think the other side is we saw many billionaires. I mean, you were just reading off in the earlier, at the head part of the show, the fact the number of billionaires that were at the event. I mean, we were there with one.
Elon Musk, Hank Rogers.
We were there with Hank. So the issue is that these are people who make and shake the fabric of
founders of Google.
Right. And so they really are saying, let's make a difference mm-hmm. and let's participate in the cutting edge and show what we can do. Mm-hmm. And that to me is why I was inspired to say, let's take our technology and let's see what could we do for sustainability and inspire and to do this. And I think what Veronica is saying is using it to show how you interact, because it is a participatory event.
Mm-hmm. And that is one of the criticisms of Burning Man, is that it's not a sustainable event. It's something where people are taking RVs and massive amounts of resources from our culture, and then they work there for a while, and they go away, just like the cargo
cult.
Right?
It's essentially cargo.
Leave no trace. You're back to the desert with nothing. And yet, there is something, because we have this blueprint in our minds of what is possible. What could be built. Yeah. And perhaps sustainable environments could be created from what we know in building Burning Man.
I think that's what we saw, Veronica.
I see so much creativity and so much discipline from people to create these things, these giant structures of the dancing woman in the middle of the playa that's welded together so lovingly piece by piece. And I just hope that spirit of givingness and creativity overflows to help the people that need help on this planet. And if I'm given a choice to build an installation for Burning Man or go build a village for people who need clean water and agriculture and education, I'm more geared towards helping people. But it is fun to make these artistic installations, and I think we all need more art in our world.
And why not both?
Why not both?
I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And I think that's what the statement really about Burning Man that I would say to even the founders, I mean, Agent K was working with the organization, as I understand, for more than 8 years. Mm-hmm. And we just saw the movie by Dieter. Is it Kelly or Julie Dieter that did the film Spark, which is the story of Burning Man? We saw that just a week before we attended Burning Man, just debuted.
Wow.
A phenomenal movie. And it highlights, you know, gave me a background of so much appreciating what this event began. But it's really outgrown anything that I think that the founders ever could imagine. Sort of like we say about MODDHA or maybe even, you know, Facebook. I don't think you really understood what was. You have one idea and one dream, and then suddenly it comes to something else. It's bigger than what they ever imagined.
Yeah, I think you're right. Agent K?
Yeah, thanks for that. I think it's important to remind the audience that this is a gift economy. There is no money that is paid. Once you attend the event, everything is not even barter. Barter is not gift.
But gift,
no money is exchanged.
Yeah.
No barter. It's all about people just being together. It's an experimental society. It's the sixth largest city in Nevada.
When it exists, right.
For 1 week every year.
Wow.
And that's a really beautiful thing, to be in a gifting culture. It's so surreal after being in our world, you know, to go there and experience that.
Yeah, and, you know, just the origins of that gift economy for my
worldview was actually started originally by Native people, and it was taught to Native people, or Native people taught it to the members of the peace movement, and the peace movement embraced it in the rainbow gatherings, and then the rainbow gatherings informed the festival culture. So you find it just really getting polished and coming into Burning Man in the form of every camp being self-sustaining, and every person who comes to Burning Man is not expected to bring everything that they need, because you certainly can arrive at Burning Man as, in fact, there have been creative experiences where an artist arrives with nothing and then goes through the whole life process of Burning Man becoming completely adorned in amazing regalia and musical instruments and starring on stage and, and then gives it all away and then leaves naked again. You know, there's so many experiences of relating to the material world in really phenomenal new ways that are so inspiring. So
I think the whole aspect of being on the playa and seeing everything illuminated, because it's a place where when that sand kicks up, if you don't have a light on your person, you can't be seen by other people.
Yes, as I've often said, it's like partying on Mars.
Yeah, especially it is. It's like another planet.
It is the closest thing to partying on Mars that I could ever imagine.
Did you guys have bikes?
We didn't have bikes with us, but we were offered bikes by several people, and we did go cruising for a bit, and that was really nice. And, of course, the art cars, you could get a lot further.
And again, as Agent K was talking about, there was an entire movie theater at the far end of the outside. I mean, an entire movie theater. You know, there were bridges. There were structures that the art installations and, again, the scope of the mega miles, square miles that this covers and the number of people. I think there's a photograph in the San Francisco Chronicle which shows a woman skydiving kind of backward, and it kind of shows this picture of the entire event. You get an idea of the scope and the size. You cannot see it. That's one of the things that Veronica mentioned. I mean, as many days as we spent there and going around, we saw such a small fraction of what
miles across. Yeah, and never been so big. Oh, 70,000, I guess it was.
70,000.
Yeah.
More than 10 people. It was a lot of people.
It was a big switch from 2000, which was the last time that I was there. So I think there was probably about 20,000 people at that time.
Yeah, around in 2000, yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And we had such weather that year.
Yeah.
We had the rains.
And the wind and the
wind
storms.
And sand. And
yes, that was a really challenging year.
Yeah, however.
But fun.
Did you get to center camp at all?
Yes, we did. In fact, that was like Cirque du Soleil boot camp.
It was amazing.
These physical people. I mean, they were doing acro yoga, which I've had the chance to do with Veronica. I love it.
Well, describe for the audience what acro yoga is.
Acro yoga is yoga where you do with a partner, and it's a series of balancing and postures of regular.
We call it flying yoga. You know, there's one person that bases that's on the ground that flies the other person like Superman, and then you go through a series of postures that are all connected. And this is a real art form, and it takes a lot of balance and physical strength. And we saw this couple. I don't know where they were from, but they just kept going and going, and literally for maybe half an hour, she was going through all these different beautiful postures.
And I know how physically strong you have to be to hold someone up through this and then to be able to go through the different movements that are involved. And I'm going, she's not tired. She's either doing incredibly strong, or she's doing some type of drugs that I've never known before because she's just incredible what we were seeing.
But anyway, she then got down and got her hula hoop and was flying then, doing all the acro yoga with her hula hoop at the same time.
Wow.
The art of hula hooping is so difficult. They make it look so easy.
I saw some new hula hoops there with lights inside them.
We, coming from Maui, we see a lot of adept fire dancers and hula hoops. This was probably the most adept hula hoopers I have ever seen. They were definitely at the top of their game. And then, Agent K?
Was she dancing on the feet or hands of her partner?
Both.
On the feet and hands.
So her partner's holding her up, and she's hula-hooping on top of him.
While doing yoga.
She was doing postures, like shoulder stands on top of his feet, with her hula hoop on one foot in a straddle, you know, keeping that hula hoop in motion, while then getting flipped over into another posture,
and these beautiful shapes, but being able to pass that hula hoop from one part of the body to the other and keep it going while being balanced like that. At the same time, we had aerial silks happening to the right, and this Russian fellow with this beautiful young girl, he was throwing her up in the air, catching her on one hand, having her balanced, like doing splits. So it was quite the show. And we had jugglers.
And it doesn't stop there. There's one couple, again, I'm going to go back to them. They were dancing after that, ballroom dance, in the most, again, acrobatic way I've ever seen. So I said to Veronica, I said, if I was an agent, I would have hired them on the spot and sent them to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
That is so amazing. I think to contextualize this for the listeners, one needs to say that this is not a show. This is just people in the community, just it spontaneously happens.
Yeah,
and teaching it
spontaneously
out of nowhere, like
happening.
You don't know when it's going to happen, but people just do this.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, yes. And then this is right in the midst of Center Camp, where there's lots of different artwork and people are participating with creating artwork. We saw a young baby asleep on this pillow that was just gorgeous, blonde little child, and he said, "This is my piece called The Cherub." Yeah, we all looked at this beautiful little girl.
You were asking me, Agent K, what was my second most profound moment, and that would be the child on this pillow, surrounded by all of this art.
Wow.
Just sound asleep, peaceful in this event. And then you realize this is the center of creativity. It is our child, physical child, the child within us, our dreams, and our inner creative spirit that can accomplish anything. And we are literally, and should be, as small children.
Mm, wonderful. Okay, we got 1 minute left of the show. Thank you guys for so much for
you.
Saying.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
It's fun to revisit all of that.
Yeah. And to say that Burning Man is expanded too. There's not just a handful of people from one subculture anymore.
No, absolutely.
It's really a global phenomenon.
Very much global.
Yeah, people all around the world are there. I worked with Media Mecca in the past. We've had,
and apparently there are other events as well. There are other events that are happening around.
The whole meme is spreading.
I think that's a good thing.
Yes. Well, thank you all. Thank you all for being here.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Michael, Veronica, Agent K, Sun, Mr. Future. Good night, everyone. And have a great, great week. Thanks for listening.
Future Show, Santa Cruz. This is KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, Monterey. Thanks for listening to the Dr. Future Show.